tackle me. Guess we'll see, won't we? I hear the challenge, and I'm up for it, knowing that I'm good for whatever he can dish out. I have a momentary flash of apology to Brad, who I'm sure never intended for his fancy white tufted leather bench to be used in quite this way, but I quickly climb up on all fours. He's already unbuckling his jeans, eyes locked on my ass on display for him through the thin cotton of my romper. He rips the fabric wide open, the cool salon air making me gasp. In mock protest, I look over my shoulder, glaring at him. Hey, I liked this nightie. He huffs out a breath and smacks my pale curvy ass. Get another one, because I liked it too. Without any further prelude, he thrusts into me balls deep in one stroke. It doesn't matter because I'm soaked and ready for him. After coming once tonight and then feeling the vibrations of his cycle, I'm practically insane with hormones. He hammers into me, hands wrapped around my hips to pull me back at the same time. He's raw this time, and I fucking love it. The result of his savage penetration is that he presses so deeply into me, and it hovers right on the edge of pleasure and pain every time he bottoms out in my pussy. I might be wild, but I'm not a fucking porn star, and I can feel things in my core getting touched that have never been touched before. He's gone, primal in his need, and it's glorious. Evan thinks this will break me, make me run in fear, but it's broken me in another way. I'm ruined for anyone else because it'll never be like this. Only with him can I have this feeling of being overwhelmed and safe all at once. He presses my chest to the bench, keeping me there with a splayed hand between my shoulders as his panting voice sings sweet symphonies to my cock-addled brain. You like this, princess? You want me to fuck you so hard that you don't come? You just shatter apart into a million pieces? I can barely speak, but I manage to grunt and push back into him with as much strength as I can muster. Yes, yes, give it to me. He roars, and I don't know if that was the right answer or the wrong one, but right now I can't care. He slows down, thrusting hard, and then grinding there against the deepest part of me, and I come apart. Evan, Evan, Evan! I scream it like it's a chant, and I know in my heart that it's because I can handle him. Challenge accepted, and challenge conquered. The flutters in my pussy go on, squeezing and massaging his cock until it triggers his orgasm and he thunders, "Princess!" I feel him fill my pussy with jet after jet, leaving me feeling absolutely devastated, wrung out, and blissfully complete. That's right, Evan. I'm your woman, and you are my man. When he refocuses, I see him look at me, confusion written all over his face, and a run of emotions in his eyes that flashes too fast for me to decipher them. He pulls out, fastens his jeans back up, and helps me stand.
Michaela, I don't know what to say. Sorry.
He turns and walks out the door, but I can't let him leave like that, so I scramble after him, grabbing his arm and turning him toward me. I stand up on my tippy toes, bringing my lips to his, trying to tell him that everything is okay. I'm lost in the kiss, in him, when I feel him tense. Pushing me away, I see his eyes go darker, intense in a different way as he growls into my ear.
Go to the door. Don't move.
At first, I think we're back on track here, growly and dominant, but the last few minutes proved that I'm more than okay with that. But as I step back toward the salon door, Evan takes off, running around the corner of the building. What the fuck? Did he really just bail on me? I hear scuffling and a grunt, and I step forward to try to hear what's going on. Evan? You okay? I try to focus in the darkness, looking the direction he disappeared but not seeing anything. Out of the black night, I see a dark figure coming straight at me, and I freeze. It gets closer, and the shadow knocks me to the ground with an oomph. Evan comes barreling around the corner a second later, chasing the shadow. But when he sees me, he stops to help me up, and the shadow gets away. What the fuck just happened? Evan lets out a big sigh but takes my arm, guiding me toward the door again.
Let's get inside.
Evan seems to almost cover me in the short walk back into the salon, locking the door behind us, and we walk up the back stairs to my apartment, locking that door as well. Finally in my apartment, I find the strength to question him. Again, what the fuck was that? Evan checks the small window overlooking the street, then turns away to look at me.
I heard a clicking sound when we were kissing. Took me a split second to place it, but I realized it was a camera shutter clicking. I took off around the corner, and that guy was there, a camera around his neck. I tried to get the camera, to knock him out for the police, but he's a wily little fucker and he got away. You okay?
I'm in shock. That's gotta be what this feeling is. I think so. He just knocked me down, and I've got plenty of cushion back there, so I'm fine. But why would someone be taking pictures of us? Evan shakes his head, looking out the window again.
Princess, I don't think he was here to take pictures of us. I think he was taking pictures of you.
Someone creeping on me at the salon, too? I mean, this is my place. My safe place. And someone was perving on me here?
Chapter 20. Evan. My life hasn't been this complicated since my time in the army. I hate to admit it, but part of me hasn't felt so alive since then either. I don't know what to think. My mind has been swirling for 2 days after the mess I made with Michaela. I keep replaying the ride, the things she said and how scarily on target she really was in the truck parking lot. Riding back, her ranting tirade, and the angry sex that didn't prove the point I thought it would. If anything, it had the opposite effect and pulled us somehow closer together. I've never abandoned myself to such utter animalistic, passionate fucking. And I've never felt anything like Michaela pushing back and giving it as good as she was taking. I'm never going to be able to top that. And of course, the guy with the camera. Immediately afterward, Michaela tried to downplay it, refusing my desire to call the police. She does have a point. There's not much they can do other than agree to keep a watch on the place, since I didn't catch the guy. I think there's more to it, though. She's the new girl in town, and doesn't want to cause any drama. But if this keeps up, sooner or later the police are going to need to be involved. In the end, I agreed with her so she would quit arguing with me. Not because she was right, but because I don't need the police to keep watch on her when I can do that myself. Besides, the cops in this town aren't exactly the FBI. They're more like, well, I don't trust them further than I can throw most of them. Then again, maybe I'm just biased from all the side eyes I've gotten. Either way, I can't do it alone. I know just the person who knows everything about everyone on Main Street, and who knows a lot of people around this town, including the people some others might not want to know about. Closing the hood on the van that I've been working on, I call out to TJ, who's changing the tires on a Honda. Need anything from Earl's? Gotta go talk to him for a tick. TJ raises an eyebrow at me, the question evident, but he doesn't ask out loud. I haven't told him much, even why I'm living above the garage full-time now. I've only been back home over the past 2 weeks to clean out my fridge, grab showers, and to check the mail. But he hasn't even attempted to ask me. Fuck. Maybe Michaela was right about his walking on eggshells around me. I guess I've always known it, of course. But I like to pretend it was for his own good. Don't go fucking with a grenade unless you're willing to deal with an explosion. Now, though, I wonder, is all of my shit just a selfish ploy to keep myself from being vulnerable? TJ finally answers, shaking his head. Nope. Tell Earl I say hi, though. I toss TJ a wave and leave the shop, walking down the street. There's a part of me that notes that today is especially beautiful, with a bright blue sky, fluffy clouds that give a little bit of shade but don't threaten rain, and a little breeze that makes me glad I grab my jacket instead of just walking down in a t-shirt. It's the sort of day that shouldn't be spent working, but out at a lake eating a turkey sandwich. But instead, I'm scanning left and right, up and down. Most folks who look for danger look left and right, just on their level. It didn't take me long in the deployed zone to learn to scan in all directions. And after a particularly nasty incident where my platoon ended up short a lieutenant, I learned to look into the drainage holes cut into curbs too, as they're a perfect place to hide an IED since most folks don't look down. Even with my eagle eyes, I don't spot anything out of the ordinary. And for the most part, I enjoy the half-mile walk to Earl's store. As I get closer, I see him out front, haggling over what looks like a load of manure with Paul Tannen, a local farmer who could probably fertilize his crops on his own with the amount of bullshit that comes out of his mouth. Earl sees me out of the corner of his eye as I get closer. And while he doesn't stop talking to Paul, I can tell he's keeping me in his sights too. That man's training never went away, and he's never gotten sloppy. Hell, if I asked him, I bet he could tell me the threat potential for every car that's passing us, along with a half dozen ways to turn Paul's load of manure into all sorts of nasty things. Then again, I can too. So maybe that's just normal for guys like us. I climb on the old-fashioned country store porch he's got and drop down into the rocking chair, waiting for them to finish up. When Earl does, he comes over and leans against a post, not saying anything, just giving me a raised eyebrow. After a few minutes of silent rocking, I give in. "You gonna say hi like you usually do?" Earl leans over, hawking a gob of spit into the dusty asphalt of his parking lot before speaking.
"Well, Mr. Evan, I'm thinking you came all the way up here to talk to me. You're not the kind to just walk up the street for a social spell like I am. I like to give a man the time he needs to say his piece. So whenever you're ready, I'm ready." I smile. Earl's a smart man. And he's right. The last time I came to his store was to drop off a tractor attachment he'd shopped out to us. "Earl, it's like this. Michaela had a little incident a week or so ago. Her car got marked up a bit. Male territorial stuff, if you catch my meaning." He nods. "Been keeping my eye on our pretty little hairstylist, too. But I ain't seen nothing that I could do anything about." For some reason, I'm touched that Earl would be looking out for Michaela, too. So I continue. "And I caught a guy snapping pictures over at Michaela's a couple of days ago. Early in the morning. Pitch black outside still. And he was wearing all black, including a balaclava, so I didn't get a good look at him. Tall, lean, but muscled, judging by the feel of him. But that's all I got." Earl hums and comes over, settling his weight on an old power line spindle that's been turned on its side to act as a sort of table.
"What'd the police say? They know of anyone to look out for?"
"Well, that's the thing. I heard the camera, wrestled with him, but he got away from me. He knocked Michaela down in the process, so I helped her and he disappeared. We didn't call the cops." Earl grunts, then gives me a knowing smirk.
"Got away from you? Must have been a slippery little fucker then. Okay, Mr. Evan. I's got two questions for you. One, what are you doing with Ms. Michaela? And two, who do you think this cameraman was?"
His eyes squint a little.
and while to a casual observer, we just look like two blue-collar guys sitting out front having a jaw before going inside to sip at an RC Cola, I swear he's looking into my damn soul. Well, for the first, I don't fucking know. And two, I don't fucking know. How's that? Earl bursts out in laughter, his big belly jiggling below his overalls as he stomps his foot and slaps at his knee. Leaning back, he looks up at the sky like he's talking to the clouds or something. He don't fucking know. That's damn sure what he said. He don't fucking know. Right about now, I'm thinking maybe Earl is a little crazier than I've ever thought. And this might have been a bad idea. Maybe he tried a few too many pharmaceuticals during his time back in Nam or something. But before I can get up, he sobers, turning back to me. All right. One thing at a time. I don't rightly know who your cameraman is either, but I'll keep an eye out. You know I will. And between the two of us, we'll keep Miss Michaela safe. I done noticed that you're living above the garage full time now yourself. Now, on to more important matters. I interrupt Earl before he can start going on about the Elk Lodge, or the price of manure, or whatever. Earl, a fucking stalker taking pictures is the important matter. He glares at me. And on to more important matters. You and Miss Michaela. You got something going with her? I dip my chin once. Earl doesn't need details. Is it mutual? I nod again. He grins. And this time it's a genuine smile. Well, there you go. Congratulations, Mr. Evan. I look at him, hovering somewhere between anger and confusion. Congratulations on what? It's not like we're dating. We're just... He laughs a little and pats his belly like it's his dog or something. You're just what? Sleeping together? I might be old, but I remember that game too. The whole stay pure until married shit went right out the door with my generation. I'm not one to kiss and tell, but I need some damn help here, so I just stare back, willing him to see my answer in my eyes. Earl gets the point. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. I gotta hand it to you, Mr. Evan. Back in my youth, not too many of my peers would have been able to avoid bragging about getting with a girl like that. You got yourself some class. So congrats there, too. I've seen you out riding with her behind you on the motorcycle. And I know you ain't never done that before with any woman. You eat dinner with her. Talk to her. I start to nod and realize something. Actually, no. We've never been out to dinner. But yeah, we talk, and she brought me cookies. So I guess we ate those. My mind flashes back to her licking the sugar off her lips. And then something else. And my cock stirs in my jeans. Thankfully, not too much. Earl sighs and looks at me like I'm the biggest fool in the world. Boy, I said my generation ditched purity, not manners. You got to take a woman out to eat before you sleep with her. Rule number one, my daddy told me. And it's the damned honest truth. Feed her. Show some damn respect, son. Now you can't go back in time and change that. But you can do better from here on out. I shrug, thinking that maybe going out to dinner with Michaela wouldn't be too bad of an idea. That is, as long as I don't have to dress up. Earl notices and nods sagely. So where was we? Oh yeah, you talk. Tell me, you talked to her about your demons? Your time in the military? The dreams and whatnot? Suddenly I see it. He's been baby-stepping me there. But I get it now. I slump back in the rocker with a jolt. Some. Not much, but some. Probably more than I've said about it to anyone else since I got back. Earl chuckles and leans forward, heaving himself to his feet. Woo, that was fun to watch. You listen here, Mr. Evan. You've been walking around like a damn zombie for years.
keeping that poison locked up tight inside your soul. And Miss Michaela, she's doing something right, whatever it is. Because you're coming back to life. I nod because I know he's right. She is doing something to me. I can feel it deep inside. Those shadows are maybe a shade lighter. The anger coiled just a little looser. More situational than the constant anger I've lived with for years. It's not healthy. But it's a damn bit better for me. But that's just it. Earl, I get it. She is helping me. I hate to admit it, but she is. But at what cost? You say I've got poison locked in my soul. But if I let it out, let it go, she's going to take the brunt of that. She might help me, but I'm going to ruin her. And she doesn't deserve that. Nobody does. But especially not her. I tried to scare her off right before the camera guy thing. Tried to get her to see how fucked up I am. Make her give up and run. Earl squares his shoulders, pointing at me with steel in his voice. Mr. Evan, did you hurt Miss Michaela? I've never been scared of Earl before, knowing I've got him beat in age, size, and skills. But in that moment, I see the stone-cold soldier he once was and know that he could do some damage if he had half a mind to do so. What? No, I didn't hurt her. I meant more verbally. We got a little rough, but it was, she was into it. I felt bad. I tried to scare her that way, but she just rolled with it. I watched Earl visibly lighten, and I'm enthralled by the way he can turn it on and off like that. Let his demons out, and then poof, gone. Well, hell, son. Making the bed frame shake a little bit ain't no thing. I've been meaning for years to tell you about this sweet little half-French, half-Vietnamese girl I knew in Saigon. She and I got up to things, too. Now I done married 3 times, and I'll admit that in each of them, there's always been someone else in my mind. Probably what ended it, too. I'm surprised. I've never heard about this part of Earl's past. You never looked for her? She died in a VC suicide bombing, Earl says softly, shaking his head. Ah, well, we all carry our ghosts. As for your girl, sounds to me like she passed your little test. She's helping you and doesn't seem traumatized by the whole thing. I told you that eventually you'd have to stop running away and turn and fight. You've never struck me as a coward, just more of a tactical man. Well, it's time, son. Let her in. Let her keep your 6 while you finally turn around and fight those demons into submission. It sure enough ain't an easy thing, but if a man has the right motivation, it's a miracle what he can do. Having said his piece, Earl sticks his hand out and offers a handshake. I stand up and shake with him. I'll see what I can do. Thank you, Earl, for agreeing to keep an eye on Michaela. Earl shakes while waving off my thanks with his other hand. Ain't no thing but a chicken wang, like we used to say. You'll do the right thing when the time's right. But make sure you're ready so you don't hurt that girl. And I'll keep a watch out for anything hinky. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to talk with my son about how to keep our biggest fertilizer customer happy. He walks inside, but I don't move. Instead, I sink back into the rocker, considering his words. I sit and think and sit, rocking on Earl's porch chair, while the fluffy clouds creep across the sky.
Chapter 21, Michaela. Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey, Brad chirps, opening my bedroom door like there's nothing wrong with a man barging into a woman's bedroom when she's sleeping. Then again, Brad is a guy I could prance around the room half naked with and not be worried about him getting inappropriate. He's stayed over the last 2 nights, helping me not freak out about the camera guy, and it's helped. Still, I was up late and slept like shit. Fuck off, Brad. He slips in, eyes covered with one hand, but his fingers so wide apart I can easily see the blue of his eyes. You decent bitch. Well, other than the obvious that you're totally indecent, but you got your girly bits covered. I do not want to see your meow meow this morning. Or ever. I laugh a bit. I can't help it. He's so weird, and it's exactly what I need to lighten this fog that's surrounding me. His other hand carries a steaming cup of coffee, and he offers it to me with a smirk. Instead of throwing my pillow at him, I sit up and take the cup. How is it? I nod at the steaming cup. Just the way you like it, sweet as candy and as dark as your soul, Brad says, handing it over to me. I sip the dark brew, moaning my appreciation that he fixed it just the way I like. Damn, last time I made someone moan like that, I was naked and covered in sweat. So was he. Yeah, well, the coffee's worth a moan, I reply, setting my cup aside long enough to stretch. Fuck, I'm gonna need about 5 of those today with the way I feel. Brad yanks my blanket away from my legs without warning, making me squeal as he shakes his head. Don't matter how bad you slept, girl. We've got a busy day today, so chop chop. Up and at 'em and all that jazz. Basically, get that jiggly ass of yours out of bed and do it now. I flop back to the pillows, careful not to spill my precious coffee. Just for calling my ass jiggly. I don't wanna. I'm just gonna stay here, curled up in bed, safe and sound, and watch trashy TV. I heard they were doing a rerun marathon of Matchmaker. So you and your overly bony ass can do my appointments. Brad reaches out and takes the coffee from my hands, setting it gently down on the nightstand. Not sure what he's doing. I'm surprised when he grabs my shoulders and shakes me. I don't do hair, he mock growls before giving me a sparkling grin. And you damn well know it. We've got a VIP coming in today, and it's all hands on deck. In case you didn't get the corporate memo, all hands is me and you. We haven't hired our new assistant yet, you know. I perk up a bit. This is news to me. A VIP? Who's coming in? Brad gives me a grin and sits down on the edge of my bed. Well, I got a call yesterday. Remember my old friend Roxy I've told you about? Yeah, the famous rock star you supposedly know, but suspiciously haven't introduced me to, I point out. What about her? What can I say? She's a busy girl. Anyway, you met her sister, Mindy, when we did Emily's wedding. Anyway, not important. Back to the VIP. Their grandmother is coming in to see the great-grandkids for a birthday party. Picturesque, no? Cute as a bunch of toddlers going apeshit all over a Chuck E. Cheese's, I reply, even though the idea of having a toddler doesn't seem that bad to me recently. Yeah, well, this grandma, she's a bit... Hell, that lady's way over the top. And when Mindy called me about this, she said they want to treat her to a bit of a spa getaway, give everyone some breathing room. I get the feeling Grandma's a small-doses kind of broad, but most people see me as that kind, too. Okay, I get it. So, what's the deal? She's coming in at 10 for the works. Scalp massage, shampoo, deep conditioner, cut, color, and curl for you, and facial, brows, mani-pedi, and makeup for me. She's the only client we have all day since I moved the other appointments we had for this one. Trust me, they made it well worth clearing house for this lady. Going along with Brad, I get out of bed, taking my sweet damn time showering and washing some wakefulness into my eyes before heading downstairs to a granola bar at 9:30, just early enough to get my station ready. Right at 10, the door dings, and I see Mindy holding the door open for an older lady who seems to still have plenty of spunk in her.
At least you chose a good place to ditch me, she says as she spies the historical committee plaque. John Wayne, huh? Let me tell you, back in the day, I'd have given good money to give old Duke a ride.
Brad comes forward, giving both women a huge grin.
Hi, Mindy. And Ivy Jo, it's been too long.
Mindy, who obviously has had enough of her grandmother for the next few moments, is glad for the distraction. She gives Brad a hug, patting his back.
Brad, you're looking fabulous, as usual.
Brad laughs.
Flattery ain't gonna get you a discount. I know how much money you have.
Ivy Jo here is getting full service, and you're just gonna have to pay for full service.
Full service? Ivy Jo asks, grinning. I don't see no hunky muscular men around here, so unless you've switched teams, you can't give me full service.
Brad gives her a hug, careful as the old woman's got a cane.
Here, let me introduce you.
And Mindy, I'll give you a call when she's ready to be picked up. Mindy gives Brad a grateful nod and a smile to me as she gives her grandmother a kiss on the cheek.
Be good, Grandma.
Hey now, I'm always good, she says. It's
when she's bad, you gotta worry, I finish for her, causing Ivy Jo to turn and give me an amused look and a smile.
Hi, I'm Michaela. I'll be doing your hair today.
She grins, pointing a finger at my hair.
You gonna make me look like that?
I pat my hair, which I've slicked down from my normal big curls into something chic and sleek.
Sorry, this sort of fabulousness is reserved for me only, but I can make you the hottest thing at your next family reunion.
Considering my family, that's quite a tall order, but I'll take you up on that challenge,
Ivy Jo says.
But no crazy colors. People already give me dirty looks when I start talking with the great-grandbabies like I'm going to ruin them. I just want to hug and cuddle them. What's so wrong with that?
Not a damn thing, I reply. Come on, let's get you settled into a chair and you can tell me all about your visit. Ivy Jo settles in, adjusting herself for a few moments, and soon we get her leaning back, shampoo worked into her hair.
So, tell me about you, Pinky, Ivy Jo says. You been around town long?
Just a little while, I admit. Moved here because I wanted to get out of the Hollywood game. It's a good place.
That it is, Ivy Jo agrees. Now if I weren't living in a good old folks complex near my other granddaughter, I'd be settling around here myself. So, you get settled in? Got yourself a man yet?
Whoa, slow down, Ivy Jo, Brad says. I glance up at him and he gives me a roll of his eyes.
This one, she'll get the claws out in a minute, know what I mean?
I'm not sure if Brad's speaking to me or to Ivy Jo, but I'm sort of glad he's interjecting. Ivy Jo, of course, thinks he's talking to her.
Damn, boy, you get cattier than my granddaughters.
Brad gives a remarkable imitation of a cat yowling before hissing twice and scratching at the air.
Yeah, well, just for that, I'm going to eat all the chocolate scones Mindy brought, as long as nobody tells my trainer.
Boy, please, you know my Mindy makes the best in town, she says. But go ahead, let us girls do our thing. You know a grandma always wants to feed her kids, so go eat your scone and mine too.
You're so good to me, Ivy Jo, Brad replies as he walks up front and plops down at the desk, digging into the box. Once she sees Brad occupied, she looks up, grinning.
So, entertain an old lady on her deathbed? Besides, I've been around the block a time or two. Maybe I can even teach you this trick I do with my tongue.
I can't help it. My fingers are covered in suds, and I start laughing so hard I cover my mouth, inhaling a bunch of bubbles until I cough. having to walk away for a moment. No, I think I'm good there. Well, you see, what you do is... Ivy Joe threatens, and I laugh hard, holding my hand up. Okay, okay, fine, I'll spill it. It's... well... I've got my eye on a guy named Evan. Accountant, Ivy Joe asks sarcastically as I get back to washing. You strike me as the accountant type. Yeah, right. More like mechanic, who's a growly, grumpy asshole, who just turns me on like no other, especially when he actually does and says nice things, but only for me. Sounds like my husband, Ivy Joe says wistfully. When I first had my eye on him, he was that man in town nobody wanted to look wrong at, else he might just be tempted to rearrange that look. But I got past that. Why's he that way? He's former service. Had some bad times, I explain as best I can. I don't know all of it, but he thinks he's damaged, and by putting up this mean, fuck-off facade, he won't hurt anyone. I know the type. My generation don't like talking about it, but my husband served in Korea. When he came back, he wasn't the same man. Oh, he was still a good man, but I could see it in his eyes. It made him kinder, though. I think he was lucky in that he saw that life was precious, so he was more open to me. Not all men are so lucky, though. Yeah, I whisper, getting the spray nozzle to start rinsing her hair. Evan's hot and cold, pulls me in and then pushes me away. I'm not the type that gives up easily, though. Ivy Joe grins, nodding. Good on you. So, what about the sex? I'm guessing it's off the charts good? Damn, I like this woman. Best ever. He's aggressive in a good way, but can be soft and teasing, too. We've been all over the place. Parking lots, his garage, the salon. Brad, who's on his second scone already, looks up and interrupts. Oh, hell no, bitch. You didn't just say the salon. OMG, please tell me you disinfected whatever it was you got your groove on. In fact, never mind. I'm noping the fuck out of here, burning the place down, and we'll start over with the insurance money. Just tell me, can I sit in my chair? The lobby? I smirk, giving Ivy Joe a wink, and purse my lips, zipping them shut as Brad throws his hands up and picks up a third scone. It's mine, but at this point I think it's safer to just let him have it. I turn my attention back to Ivy Joe, who's chuckling. So, yeah, the sex is definitely off the charts good. She laughs as I sit her up. Woo-wee, girl, you are gone for this man. He likes you too, I can tell by what you said. Ain't no man gonna pull you back after pushing you away unless he's got something invested. Yeah, well, not sure it matters. I've basically thrown myself at him, and he's caught me. But then he retreats back to his corner and shuts me out again with a wall around him. I'm trying to make him see he doesn't need to worry about breaking me. But damn if he's not stubborn. Don't you worry. Just keep tapping that wall, Ivy Joe says. It won't come down all at once, but the cracks will spread like spider webs, little weak spots all over until, boom, it comes crumbling down. Oh, that reminds me. That's an old Mellencamp tune. Lord, that man was hot back in his day. But then again, so was I. Anyway, when that wall falls, he's gonna be scared to death. So you'd better be right there for him. But listen, and listen close. You deserve to be loved right. I don't mean sex. I mean in your soul. You need to be loved right, and he does too. Maybe you're willing, ready, and able to love him right, and do it now. But if he isn't ready, if he isn't capable of doing right by you, don't you wait around too long for him to get it straight. Every day is precious, and you don't want to spend it waiting around for him to figure out that you're a damn good thing. I don't really know what to say, so I sort of agree and change the subject. You're right, and I just hope it works out. So, tell me about your great-grandbabies. Ivy Jo grins and gets the point, and as I finish with her hair, she goes on and on about her family. The cut and color is just like she asked, and while the old lady curl set isn't something I've done in years, it's just like a bicycle. You don't forget how. Okay, Ivy Jo, just a minute now. I turn her to the mirror and she shrieks in horror. Oh my gosh, child! You made me look like a damn drowned poodle! She fluffs her hair with light fingers, her eyes horrified. Someone call my damned lawyer! I'm shocked. Maybe the curl set wasn't as easy as I thought. I'm really... She catches my eye with a smirk, almost giggling. Gotcha! A huge wave of relief sweeps over me, and she cackles while leaning back, wiping at her eyes. Oh, that was fun. You should have seen your face. An old lady's got to get her laughs in where she can, and that was too easy to not take advantage. I sigh and laugh along. It feels good, this woman's crazy energy infusing me with some needed lightness in the midst of my swirling drama. Good point. Okay, let's get you turned over to Brad. She moves over to Brad's chair, and I think for a minute about asking her advice about the car drama and the camera guy. But before I start, I realize she's talking to Brad about the cute trainer down at his gym and whether he should ask him out or not. I decide that maybe it's his turn for a little grandma wisdom, and let it go, just enjoying the moment. I turn to look out the window, seeing the big bay doors open at the garage. There are legs sticking out from under a car, but even from here, I can tell it's TJ and not Evan. I sigh, hoping that Grandma is right, and it's just a matter of sticking it out until Evan's walls crumble down.
Chapter 22. Evan. I watch Michaela look across the street as she carries in a load of groceries, and I can read her look as our eyes briefly meet as I finish off a cup of coffee outside. I don't know how I'm going to get through to her. I've tried everything I can to push her away, and it didn't work. I've thought about what Earl said, and even though I know he's right, I'm not sure I can be what Michaela needs. She needs a safer kind of bad boy. The sort of guy who'll be happy to go rolling on a Harley with her, or go skydiving, or any other crazy damn thing she has pop into her head, but who isn't a ticking time bomb. She needs someone who can still be a rock, a foundation she can build her life upon. There's a part of me that would like to be, but I know I'm not. Not now, and maybe not ever. But she isn't getting it. Instead, she's looking at me with that same mix of half-exasperation, half-confidence that tells me she still has her sights set on me, and is only frustrated I haven't accepted that yet. I at least owe her an apology. That I know for sure. But how do I apologize basically for my entire personality? My asshole tendencies? The way the darkness just spews forth sometimes beyond my control? And that I'm not even sure I can be some dinner date nice guy who treats her like the princess I always call her. I haven't had a good night's sleep since it all went down. I've told TJ about the stalker, leaving out the sex beforehand, and that Earl and I are keeping a watch on Michaela. But he doesn't understand. To TJ, keeping an eye out means glancing over and not going out of your way. Because bad shit just doesn't happen to good people in his world. I know differently. I know that the only reason good people are able to sleep safely at night is because there are bad people like me who are willing to do bad shit to the other bad guys. So that means, in my case, I've taken the night shift. So my last few nights have been spent in the pitch black, peering through the blinds, a set of binoculars at my side as my mind whirls and replays every moment with Michaela and the quick seconds with the stalker. Hopefully the sneaky fucker I'm hunting shows his face soon. I want this to be over with. With nights spent frozen and waiting, I've had to bail on TJ a bit during the day, grabbing naps while Earl has found daily reasons to come walking by the street, chatting up folks as he always does. To someone who didn't know better, you'd think he was just being his nosy Nancy old self, while maybe getting a little extra exercise. But I know he's patrolling, and I appreciate his diligence. TJ has at least been cool about letting me head up for a few hours of shut-eye in the late afternoon, after we get most of the work done. At least, he's been cool about it until today. You watch her again last night? I pause at the door to the stairs and look at him with a raised eyebrow. Of course. We haven't caught the fucker yet. TJ shakes his head, looking around the shop at the three jobs we've got stacked up right now. Fast Eddie cracked a steering rod at the track. The Petersons have their minivan in for an oil flush and tune-up, and Earl himself brought in his old truck for a balance job on the rear axle. Listen, have you talked to her? Maybe she knows something new, or talked to the cops. I'm silent. I don't know how to tell him that after getting her up to her apartment and the two of us calmed down, I just held her for the few hours till the sun rose. We'd started talking about who it could have been, what it might mean, and about how it was likely related to the incident with her car. I was ready to kick some ass and take some names. I had my immediate gut suspicions, including our all-too-friendly city councilman. But Michaela kept minimizing it. Maybe it was punk kids messing with her car. Maybe the guy was taking pictures of the moon. Just some big misunderstanding. Hopefully that's all it is. But my gut says that ain't it. I wanted to give her something else to focus on, a distraction from the seriousness I suspected was coming. So I had shifted the conversation to talking about her. We chuckled through her stories about working in LA on a scandalous TV show. How Brad has a sort of second-level connection to some pretty famous people in town. And how she and Brad had decided to become their own bosses in a new place. It gave me a new understanding for just how big of a life upheaval they made together, and made me appreciate that she has such a good friend in him. He's more than just his prancing prissy act, though, and I respect that. He's a risk-taker, living life on his own terms. Anyone else be damned. And I fucking love that about Michaela, too. I wish I were that gutsy, but I'm not.
Tell me about what scarred you,
Michaela says, leaning against me and nestling her head against my chest.
Because it must have been a lot to get past that basic bedrock of decency that I sense in you.
I consider telling her to fuck off, that she hasn't got the right to ask about what's fucked me up. But instead I take a deep breath and start to answer her. There was a lot. But the final straw was my second tour, this time to Afghanistan. I close my eyes, and in my head I can smell the odor of the camp. Our base camp was in some backwater village. I could barely mumble the damn name. The Taliban had been getting up to their typical bullshit in the area, so the brigade commander thought it'd be a good place to send my company. We had to go in the old-fashioned way, pumping our damn rucks and most of our supplies carried in by the three armored Humvees that were also supposedly our heavy weapons platforms. That village. It was so poor that most of the people heated their houses by burning the dung of their goats. They cooked their breakfasts over fires of burning goat shit. I'd never smelled anything so bad in all my life. And by the third day, I barely noticed it. It was sunk in everywhere. Things were quiet for a while. The Taliban were keeping their heads down, but we knew what they were doing. They'd been doing the same trick for 15 years, and before us, the older guys were playing the same fucking game with the Soviets. New unit comes into town full of piss and vinegar. Lay low.
let us get worn down by the grind, by the homesickness and the bad rations and the once-a-week showers. Let us get worn down by seeing the starving kids who bugged us constantly for something from our MREs. We couldn't give them a thing, though, because we knew if we gave one morsel to a kid, we'd have 20 more on our asses like ants to honey, and soon enough, some adult would get their ass in a twist saying we'd given them unclean food. So, the Taliban waited. And even if we didn't mean to, we started to relax. We let things slip, let things go slack. And that's when they hit us. I'd been tasked with four other guys to take two of the Hummers to battalion headquarters on a supply run. Mail, more rations, ammo, even though we'd hardly used any, shit like that. I was in the back of the lead Hummer when they hit. I got lucky, I guess. The rear Hummer was hit by a Taliban RPG full-on, taking out the gas tank and turning our mail and most of our ammo into a ball of fire. But whoever was supposed to shoot at us was a little off. He hit near the right front tire. Perkins, the driver, jerked the wheel and got us off the road, where I jumped to save my ass. I pause, and I open my eyes to feel Michaela stroking my face.
Evan, it's okay.
I shake my head, kissing the tips of her fingers. They went over the side. We were halfway up a mountain, and there was no real guardrail. Some nights, I can still hear Perkins scream when he realized what he'd done. I turned my attention to the other Hummer, spraying up the hill toward where I guessed the attackers were. I had 200 rounds, and I used them. But there wasn't much I could do. The other guys never had a chance. I tried, Princess. I tried so hard.
What happened?
I had a radio, I rasp, thinking back. And I was lucky. The Air Force had a couple of birds in the area. They dropped napalm and tore up the mountainside with those big fucking guns of theirs in a couple of passes. They sent in an evac for me, and somehow I got a cut on my cheek that needed 3 stitches. So I've got a combat infantry badge, one barely deserved Purple Heart, and the rest of them? Their family's got a flag and a letter signed by the president. That's it. But at nights I can still see them. I expected her to pity me. I've seen those looks before. But like she always does, she surprised me. Instead, Michaela stroked my face again before hugging me, even as I stayed stiff in her arms, running her fingers through my hair.
You served well,
she said quietly.
Those ghosts, they'll be with you. But they aren't mad at you for surviving. They want you to live, Evan. To live well. To honor them by living well.
Her words shook me to my core. And now looking across the garage at my brother, who'd taken my lost feelings and my laundry lists of mental issues with a simple decision that I was working in the garage with him. And that was that. I just don't have the energy to deal with him right now. She didn't go to the cops. Doesn't want to make a big deal. I'm thinking me and Earl can handle it anyway. I give him a pointed look and hope he keeps his big mouth shut. TJ, who went to the cops last year when he found some wannabe gang graffiti on the rolling door, shrugs in that way he has that says he doesn't understand, but doesn't really care.
Fine, whatever. Besides the camera guy, don't you want to talk to her about other stuff? Like, you know, you and Michaela? What's going on there?
My eyes dip down to my boots. And I really wish TJ would just get to the part where he says he wants me to get one of the jobs done tonight while I'm watching the salon. Earl says I need to take her to dinner. But I'm not exactly the guy who picks a girl up with flowers to go to some fancy restaurant in a 4-door sedan. TJ grins wolfishly, laughing softly.
Well, damn, you don't say. I'd have never known that, asshole. Bet she doesn't either. She probably thinks you're some sweetheart who's gonna wine and dine her. Romance her like a chick flick.
That's totally the vibe you give off. You're all the notebook, you know? I grin in slightly shocked surprise. TJ getting one over on me is rare. And laugh at the image of me in some twisted rom-com movie as the anti-hero type, and give him a push on the shoulder. Fuck you, man. We end up wrestling back and forth like when we were boys, goofing and pushing and laughing. I finally wrap his head with my arm in a loose chokehold, rubbing my knuckles through his hair. After it's standing up with static, I release him, our laughing breaths echoing loudly in the garage. He smooths his hair back and hops up on a big drum of solvent that we use for cleaning tools. Man, you may not be some wine and dine type, but everybody eats. Get your scaredy cat ass over there and invite the woman to dinner. I don't care if it's a fucking pizza. Take her on a date. Hell, you can double with me and Alice if you want. Wait, on second thought, scratch that. You'd probably scare the shit out of her. Maybe I can introduce you to her in stages. 1 minute here, 10 minutes there. It'll probably take a few months to build up to an entire dinner with your grumpy ass. I laugh out loud, and I see TJ's moment of hesitation as he wonders if he took it too far, before he relaxes and laughs fully along with me. It hurts when I realize I did that to him. He has to think about every word he says to me and is always waiting for the other shoe to drop at the most unexpected time. Michaela was right. I gotta fix that. That's not the guy I want to be. TJ's been the one hanging with me through some dark days and even darker nights, and he deserves to have a brother who's there for him, too. Hell, just 2 minutes ago, I was ready to get defensive and accuse him of being an asshole. Instead, maybe I need to open up to him, too. Hey, TJ looks up at me, a question in his eyes, and I don't even know what I was going to say, so I don't think about it. I just grab him in a hug, patting harshly on his back a few times. Thanks, bro. He squeezes me back, and when he answers, his voice is a little raspy. Hey, bro, it's good. You okay? I step back, nodding. Guess I need to go see a girl about dinner. Wish me luck, because I damn sure fucking need it. He nods as I turn, wishing me good luck behind my back as I start heading for the street. My eyes are laser focused on the salon door, but I swear I see a reflection in my periphery of TJ, wiping a single stray tear from his eye.
Chapter 23, Michaela. My heart goes into thundering pity-pats when I look up from my tea to see Evan coming across the street, his eyes on fire. He's walking with a purpose, and I can't decide if it's a good one or not. Maybe he's coming over to tell me to leave him alone, that I'm too much trouble. He did ghost me the other day, after all. I agreed to go grab some breakfast with him down at the diner, and when I saw Brad, I went over to talk to him for a second. I turn around and Evan had pulled a ninja act worthy of a Batman movie, and he's been totally radio silent for days now. Hell, I never know with him, so maybe he's coming over to ask me on another ride. I certainly could go for one. Today's dragged on like nobody's business. I smooth the non-existent wrinkles in my jeans and press my lips together to make sure my lipstick is perfect as Evan mounts the curb and strides across the parking lot, trying to calm the tremble in my fingers. I can't help it, even if he does piss me off. There's something about Evan that's just... I need him. So whatever the reason, I'm gonna look good while Evan says his piece. Maybe then I'll get to say mine, too. I'll get to explain to him that I don't care about his being broken, that I don't care about the attitude or his fears, that I understand his biggest fear. He blames himself for surviving when so many others died. But all I care about is how he makes me feel when I'm in his arms.
He pulls the door open, steps inside, and all conversation stops. Hell, the whole world might as well have stopped turning.